Sermons from the Journey is an audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Rebecca Clark, pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Montpelier, Vermont, and blogging online at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
Several summers ago, more than 15 summers ago, it turns out, when I was thinking about it, I was hired to work in the pottery barn, in an actual shed or pottery barn, at a camp for the summer. And there were some generalized arts and crafts. There was a general arts and crafts barn. I was not hired for that one, but to work specifically in the pottery shed. And when they hired me, I said, that's great, but I have no experience throwing pots on a wheel. I can do the hand building and the pinch pots, and I can teach kids how to sculpt animals and work with them in all sorts of clay-based crafts like that. I'm sure if you taught me to fire the kiln, I could do that. And if you, I can help paint and glaze and all those things, but I've never thrown a pot on the wheel. I tried it once in high school, and it was a disaster. So I can do everything except that. That's fine, they said. Our lead counselor in the pottery shed is someone who is a pro at throwing pots on the wheel, so you won't have to do that. So we had a one-week staff orientation, and we all did our parts, and we all tried everything, but, you know, I was going to be in charge of the hand building and pinch pots. Yes. And about 2.5 weeks into the summer, the head person in the pottery shed quit. And so did the other person in the pottery shed. And that left me as the sole counselor, worker, teacher in the pottery shed. And people wanted to throw pots. That summer, I threw an entire set of dishware for two, plates and cups and bowls. I made a vessel, like a bowl and a pitcher, very small, things shrink as they dry, I learned, and a communion cup and plate that I keep in my office. Some of the random pieces of pottery on my shelves in my office came from my summer there. It's the only time I ever threw pots, before or since, but when you're the only person teaching it for 10 out of 12 weeks, you get to know it pretty quick and pretty well. And so I learned a lot about that, and this passage, of course, reads differently the more you know, as most metaphors do, most passages do, the more you know about the image and the metaphor that the prophet is using or that Jesus is using in a parable, the more richly you can kind of see what's going on. Throwing a pot is a delicate art form. The wheel is doing the work of keeping it symmetrical for you. But apart from that, there's so much required in the right amount of pressure. Too much pressure and the whole thing will fall over. Not enough pressure and you won't make any change to the shape whatsoever. And it strikes me that if we are indeed the clay, that much of God's work in our lives is about just the pressure alone. Too much pressure on us. Too much, you know, it feels like you've been tested to your breaking point, right? Too much pressure on our lives and we'll fall right over. We'll wobble, we'll get all out of shape and collapse. Not enough pressure, though, and we won't change. Our shape will remain the same, and we'll just be a lump of clay going around and around on a wheel. So we need enough pressure to change and to shape us. And so a potter needs patience and that skill, that fine balance of skill with how much pressure to apply and where and when to help create, when to squeeze in to change the shape, when to pull out, when to lift up to make the vessel taller. It takes a great deal of, it's a kind of dance with one's hands and the clay. And so imagining us as the clay and God as the potter, and that vision that God would have in God's mind about the shape our lives should take and when to encourage us in and when to draw us out and when to lift us up and when to press down and change the shape of the vessel that we are becoming. It's a beautiful image. But there's so much going on that's not in the control of the potter, which is a little bit challenging, right? We like to, you know, we talk about God being all-powerful and in control, but the clay has to be good clay. If the clay is not good clay, then you're not going to be able to make much of a vessel out of it. Sometimes the clay gets too dry, and we know what happens with clay that gets too dry. It's brittle, it's cracked, you can't change its shape anymore. A lot of us feel dried out from time to time, I think. But sometimes the clay gets too wet. We add water to the clay to make it easier to shape. But sometimes those things that make us easier to be shaped, well, we could get just a little too loosey-goosey. And so a lump of clay that's trying to become a vessel, if it gets too wet, it has no strength to hold itself up, and it'll just collapse. Curiously, when that happens, we might not want to push this metaphor too far, but when that happens, you take the clay off the pot, off the wheel, and you slap it against the table for a while on a surface that's made up of more dried clay. And you slap the wet clay against the dry clay, which is curious, but that's what you do, and the water kind of comes out, and the clay dries a little bit, and you're able to harden it back up again and shape it back. What you don't do, what you hardly ever do, is throw the clay away. You don't take even the little cuttings that are so super soggy and wet, even the chipped dry pieces, as long as they haven't been fired in the kiln, you mix them back together, you let them sit together for a while, and eventually they go back to being clay, and you can use them again. If a lump of clay has uneven places in it, parts that are more dry or more wet than others, or pieces of sand that are too big, then those imperfections, which you can't see when you're working with the clay, those hidden hurts and sticking places inside us, when the potter's hand is shaping the clay, you might bump into it, or it might cause the clay to just be unbalanced, uneven, and it creates a wobble, it creates an imbalance in the vessel. And so those hardened places inside us, places that the potter might not see, although our potter sees all the places inside of us that are hardened and brittle and flecks of imperfection and uses and shapes the clay anyway, but pieces inside ourselves we may not even see that might cause us to wobble or snag. And then if there's an air bubble, an empty space inside the clay, the same thing happens. The emptiness is dangerous too. The emptiness actually might go and hide all the way through the vessel being formed. Sometimes, again, it might tip the balance and make it wobble and need to be redone. But sometimes it hides all the way through. But then when we put it in the heat and pressure of the kiln, it explodes, damaging not only itself, but the other pieces around it. As you can see, we could preach forever just on the metaphor of the clay. And the songs that we sing about it reflect this sense of God shaping us, of God constantly forming us. One of the beautiful things about watching somebody really, really skilled at pottery, far more skilled than I became, but is to watch them build a vessel way up and take it way down and in and out and change its shape, as Jeremiah says, just as easily as they change their mind. A slight adjustment of the hands and the whole vessel is transformed. There's a beauty to the fluidity of that, that this piece of pottery is constantly being shaped. It's constantly being formed. It's in constant motion, literally. It doesn't work if it's not in constant constant and consistent motion. And it's being constantly shaped until finally there is a vessel that is done, that is ready. And then it's submitted to tremendous heat and pressure, which also feels a lot like life. What I noticed, though, in preparing worship for this passage and in reflecting on the other pieces of worship, the prayers, the songs, is that we like to look at this passage as if it's talking about us individually. Sometimes we change the words to the songs, but I intentionally didn't this morning. So we have "Change My Heart, O God. Make me ever new. Make it ever new. May I be like you. You are the potter. I am the clay. Mold me and make me." Right? Or "Spirit of the Living God." That's one we often change to say, "Fall afresh on us." But I intentionally left it as it's in the hymnal. "Fall afresh on me. Melt me. Mold me. Fill me. Use me." There's nothing wrong with this language or imagery. It's beautiful, and we hear it in the psalm that Vicky read, which, as I told you, is one of my favorite, if not the favorite passage in all of Scripture for me, and one that I pray personally, devotionally, as a psalm of my life, a reminder that it is God who has shaped me, Becca, personally, formed me in my inmost being, as the psalm says. So that's a beautiful image, but that's not what Jeremiah is told to say about the potter. In the story where Jeremiah goes to see the potter at work, what God gives Jeremiah to say is not about individuals. Listen, individual people, when you make a mistake, I'm like a potter and I can just fold that clay back together and build it back up into something new. And you know what? If you really are doing it wrong, I'm going to squish you all the way back down. But then I can build you up again and you can be reborn and reformed. That's not the word that God gives Jeremiah to say. God says to Jeremiah, speak to the people of Israel, the whole nation. Speak to people as a whole and tell them that whole nations are like clay in my hands. And they rise and they fall and they act in loving ways and they act in painful ways. And they act in ways that cause us to say it is time to be reformed, reshaped by God. Ariana has as homework the instruction to read for 15 minutes every night. And she selected a book off her shelf that must have come from my childhood bookshelf or that of one of my friends. I do remember reading it vaguely. It says ages 7 and up. I don't remember reading it that young. And it's one of the American Girls series. They're like, they're dolls and they also made books and they're girls who lived at different points in American history. The book she selected was Meet Addie, and Addie is the American girl who lives as a slave during the Civil War. And so Ari started reading this book aloud to me, thankfully, and we read it for 2 nights, and she's decided to stop or to wait to read it further because it's very disturbing to her as the book describes the horror, really toned down. I mean, it's intended for kids, but still, the horror and brutality of slavery. She can't get her mind around people treated like cattle, or worse, like objects. She can't understand a baby without a crib. She cries, weeps at the thought of families sold and separated from one another, and of overseers who punish and brutalize the people who are working in the fields, until she finally said, I can't read this anymore. And she said to me last night, amid confession and deep anguish over confronting what it means to be a person of privilege, she said, I feel badly that I have white skin. And I thought, yeah, sit with that. That's hard. And it's real. But she said, why? I don't understand why people do this. Is this as bad as it gets? Is this the only time that people have lived like this, that people have been treated like this? You know, I have a friend who just traveled all over Europe and was posting on Facebook pictures from concentration camps. And I thought to myself, oh, honey, no. Unfortunately, no, and we're not going to go into all of the horror and drama of centuries upon centuries, millennia of slavery, of incarceration, of concentration camps and internment camps, of trails of tears and shrinking native people's lands, and of all of the brutality that people are capable of somehow, unfathomably, in their hearts. But I thought, oh, we are in need of a potter. We are in need of a potter to tear us down as humanity and build us back up again, because here we go again. In an interview, long after his presidency had ended, a reporter asked President Clinton what he wished he'd done differently. What is the one thing you wished you'd done differently in your time as president? 8 years. And a lot of some scandals, some problems, some struggles, some great economic growth, actually, comparatively, when we look back. 8 years of his presidency, what's the one thing you wish you could change? And no hesitation, President Clinton said, I'd given this a lot of thought. I wish we'd done something in Rwanda. I don't know what that should have been. I don't know how that should have been, but we saw what was happening there. We saw the bloodshed. We saw the genocide. We saw the devastation and the tremendous loss of human life, and we did nothing. And I regret that. That is my deepest and most profound regret, because unlike most people, I was in a position to try to do something about it, and we didn't. When we look at what's happening in Syria, I can't begin to pretend to know the answers. I'm a pacifist. I'm not a just war theorist. That means I don't really believe that it's okay to send military to try to achieve peace. That seems counterproductive to me. George Carlin has a great quote about that I won't say from the pulpit, but Google George Carlin and what it means to fight for peace, and you'll see why I won't say that from the pulpit. But it's this tension that I can't sit with in myself, and yet at the same time, how do we do nothing? How do we bring humanitarian aid and relief when we might have to open space for that to happen? We see it in Syria. We saw it in Somalia. We saw it in Rwanda. There are places where we intervened. There are places where we didn't. We throw our hands up and we don't know. Because at the end of the day, we're the clay. We're not the potter. And when we try to be the potter, we're going to get ourselves in trouble. When we try to shape ourselves in this global way, we have so many hardened places inside ourselves that cause us to be off balance, and so many empty places inside ourselves that might explode and damage us and the people around us. We are in need of a potter, not only individually. Yes, we need that, and it's beautiful and important personally, devotionally, to receive God as our potter to build and shape us. But communally, not just as a people, not just as a congregation, not just as a state or a community or a nation, but as all of humanity. I feel us again built up as a vessel and wobbling all over the place. Again and again, in stories that children will read for generations, we don't get it right. And the message that God gives to Jeremiah is, if you can turn this around, I'll build you back up again. And no matter how high you've been built up, there is within humanity this flaw, this pain, this hard place, this empty place, and we'll wobble and topple again, and God will build us back up again. And so my message this day is not so much an answer as a question, and not so much a sermon as a prayer. A prayer for a patient, for a gentle but firm, for a potter with a sense of what pressure is needed where, for God to shape us, for we are toppling again. As we have toppled before, as we will topple again. And so we pray that God will indeed mold all of us, not just in this room, not just in our nation, not just the leaders of nations, but all of humanity, with this hardness in our hearts that makes us capable of hurting one another in this way, with this emptiness inside us that becomes explosive. Oh God, that you would shape us, and if necessary, rework us into a new vessel, reshaped, reformed, so that we could one day be filled with your grace. Amen.